case number 212811, Victoria Okapu Mba versus Postmaster General of the United States. Oral argument not to exceed 15 minutes per side. Mr. Piper, you may proceed for the appellant.
Let me say preliminarily that we're going to try not to run almost 15 minutes over on every case, so don't have expectations. I'm going to try to move
along. I hope
along.
I can at least hold your interest half as well as the other folks.
Pardon me? What did you say?
I hope I can hold your interest at least half as well as the other folks did, so we'll see. May it please the Court, William Piper appearing on behalf of the plaintiff appellant, Victoria Okapu Mba. This is an appeal of a race, age, and retaliation case that was dismissed by the district court. In the case of Babb versus Wilkie, it's a recent case from the United States Supreme Court. The court adopted a motivating factor for age discrimination cases against federal employees with the idea that the federal employer is supposed to be a model employer. And I think, therefore, that for all the claims, the age, the race, and the retaliation, that the motivating factor standard should be the one that applies, not the but-for standard. The court seemed to focus, and as a matter of fact, I think the words of the court were, it was uncontradicted that Ms. Fish believed that my client was too slow. But I think the real question is, could a reasonable jury conclude that one of those factors, age, race, or retaliation, was a motivating factor, even if we assume for the sake of argument that she thought that my client was too slow? And I think the answer to that question is yes. If you look at the comparison between how she was treated with the others, I think it stands out. Victoria was not given a 60-day review. The other substantially younger white employees were given a 60-day review. Victoria was not given an 80-day review. All the other employees were given an 80-day review. Victoria was not allowed to actually complete her 90-day probationary period. Obviously, the other employees were allowed to complete it. As a matter of fact, she was terminated, if you consider Thanksgiving, Christmas, and New Year's as holidays. She wasn't able to work 13 days out of the initial 90-day probationary period. She could have, during that time, impressed upon her employer of her ability to do the job and things of that nature. So all of those things would lead you to believe that why wasn't she given a 60-day review? Why wasn't she given an 80-day review? Well, I would submit that there probably wasn't that much of a concern about her speed, otherwise they would have sat her down,
but there were
given her a review.
Weren't there three different people who talked about her speed? Fish went to Witten and somebody else, and the one said she's very slow, and the other one said she didn't have a sense of urgency. I mean, it's not just one person. She's getting feedback from two others who say she's too slow.
I mean, yes, I concede that's in the record. However, if you look at the actual behavior, why wasn't she given a 60-day review, to emphasize this again? Why wasn't she given an 80-day review? Why wasn't she allowed to complete her probationary period? All of that is, you have to consider in conjunction with the fact that there was this very extremely serious incident that occurred on December 23rd of 2016. I hate even to say it, but I think I need to for the record, where another employee raced up to Victoria and called her a fucking old African piece of shit and said, you need to go back to your own country or go back to your own country or words to that effect. Victoria complained about it.
So you're saying that she was, that's your retaliation claim? Her complaint about that, I mean, it wasn't with a supervisor, right?
Correct.
So, I mean, it was with a coworker.
Correct.
So I guess I'm just, is that the retaliation claim? They just retaliated against her because she complained?
Well, the fact is she complained to her supervisor, Ms. Fish, about it. And shortly after that, she was terminated. She was not given the opportunity to complete the probationary period.
As I understand it, the only act that involves a supervisor in this case is this particular one. I mean, the other actions that she claims that constituted harassment are fellow employee actions only. Is that correct? Is that a correct description of the evidence?
Yes, that is a correct
description. Her harassment claim has to rise and fall based on the adequacy of the response to the action by Ms. DeGrasse, whatever we call, however we pronounce it.
Just to clarify, I'm not raising the harassment claim on appeal. I think the case law is fairly clear that even though this incident was quite serious, there has to be more than one incident. I think, though, that...
So, although there's a lot of stuff about the way she was treated by fellow employees in your brief, you're not basing a claim on that.
No, I think that the overall environment was not good and not conducive for employees to succeed.
The overall environment is somehow attributable to supervisory people when there's no allegedly discriminatory action on their part?
Well, I think the discrimination is the fact that they, you know, took all of this into account. They treated her differently from the other three substantially younger white women by giving them all the reviews wasn't given the reviews.
The point I'm trying to ask you about is really when you consider the discrimination claim, that is, that others were not fired for being slow when she was, and you contend that not so much that she wasn't slow, but that she was just treated differently from other people in this process, right?
Yes, and she wasn't given an opportunity to complete her 90-day probationary period to prove herself. Right after she complained, shortly after, she's fired. I think, you know, I'm suggesting here that she complained, and the defendant thought, let's get rid of the problem of the complainer and the unruffling at the workplace by terminating her. And they jumped the gun and didn't allow her the opportunity to prove herself. If you're subjected to a severe incident like that, are you supposed to shrug it off and act as if nothing had happened? I think that would affect any normal, reasonable employee.
But she was slow because of the way she was treated?
I think it's an admission that would affect someone's employment. It would affect their ability to work at the job. As a matter of fact, she testified that it did affect me for a while. So if you're subjected to something like that, you know, why wouldn't you be given an opportunity to demonstrate your improvement or your abilities over the entire 90-day probationary period?
My understanding is that they said that the 80-day meeting, the 80-day review or whatever meeting was when she was fired. Is that right?
I don't know that there's testimony specifically to that effect. She was fired about at the 80-day period. I think it was slightly.
So when you're saying, I mean, I hear you about the probationary period, but are we talking about 10 more days, basically 2 weeks more?
Yeah, I calculated as 13 days that they didn't allow her to complete. So, and I think that's important. When you're subjected to this incident, it's going to affect you. Why not give her the opportunity to complete her probationary period?
But how close in time were they?
The incident occurred on December 23rd of 2016, the incident with Jesse DeGrasse, where she attacked her and used those slurs. The termination was on January 13th of 2017, and of course you have the Christmas and New Year's holidays in between there, so you're not really given an opportunity after this severe incident to demonstrate your improvement.
Don't normally take holidays off around the holidays. I mean, they, you know, don't deliver on Christmas Day and, you know, maybe New Year's Day.
Yeah, I'm aware of that, but as far as I know,
theoretically in this country, the mail has always, you know, rain or snow, all of that.
That's very, very true, but as far as I know, post office is still closed Thanksgiving, Christmas, and New Year's, so those
are
days. She
was disciplined, right? The woman who
said that? She was given a talking to, whether you consider that discipline or not. There was no formal discipline in her record. I don't think that's all that important as far as this case is concerned, but other than to show that the disparate treatment between how a serious incident like that is treated when it's perpetrated on her compared to, you know, her...
There was, There was an issue with the speed, though, before the incident, wasn't there?
One of the first things
they pointed out.
Yes. I concede that that is the most difficult part of my case. However, the other individuals, the three substantially white...
Wait, why isn't the most difficult part of your case... I'm not sure I follow who the comparators are and how relevant they are. Maybe you can address that. And then, obviously, we've got... Still a little bit confused about the pretext and why you think the reason for the firing was pretextual. But why don't you start with the comparators?
Yeah, the comparators, the main comparator was Taylor Perkins. She had disciplinary act, docking, so to speak, for her attendance at the 60 and 80 day period. She had missed, I think, a total of 2 days up to that point, one full day and two half days. And then right before her 90 day was about to conclude, she missed two or three days to go to, I think, attend to her grandmother's illness or something to that effect.
Why is that an appropriate comparator? I mean, your client was terminated more for her speed on the job than her absence from the job, isn't that right?
Well, I think efficiency and productivity is governed not only by how fast you work, but also your availability.
Clearly you have to be there, but I thought the main complaint about your client was that when she was there, she just didn't perform very well.
That was the complaint the defendant had. However, the main ability is availability, and if you're not there, you're not going to be productive. And I would submit that my client was more productive than Ms. Perkins, who missed numerous days. However, Ms. Fish bent over backwards for Ms. Perkins, said, okay, you can miss, you know, additional days, even though my client was told you can't miss any days during your probationary period. Yet Victoria was not even given an opportunity to complete her entire 90-day probationary period and was not given an allowance for the fact that she was a victim of a racial incident at the workplace, a serious racial incident where I would call that a physical assault involving racial slurs and ageist slurs. And it's like, that doesn't matter. You're still supposed to meet all our standards, and besides that, we're not even allowing you to finish the probationary period. So I think there's substantial evidence of disparate treatment here. So the question is, was age, race, or retaliation, you know, when she complained about the serious incident, a motivating factor? Maybe they were concerned about her speed, yes. But the standard, as I started off my presentation, is was age, race, or retaliation a motivating factor, even though other things may have also factored into the decision, but was it a motivating factor? And I would submit, based on the disparate treatment, that yes, it was, and particularly where you have this incident where she complains and she's fired shortly after that. So I think those are things that, you know, you have to look at the actual standard of review here, they can be concerned about her speed, but they can't also be concerned about her age, race, or retaliation. So,
thank you. You'll have your rebuttal.
Thank you.
All right, Ms. Goodness. Balmassian?
Yes, that's correct. Okay. Good afternoon. May it please the court. Carrie Almassian on behalf of the defendant, the Postmaster General of the United States. I believe the plaintiff may have agreed that her speed was actually a factor and a concern when she was a probationary employment at the post office. And the district court's decision that her speed was the reason for her termination was correct. As the court mentioned, not only did the supervisor observe the plaintiff and notice that she was slower than the other employees, but two other supervisors agreed that she was slow. In addition to that, two other coworkers were deposed, and they also testified that
but
she worked too
generally,
slow.
The motivation is a question of fact, right? If you have no evidence of discrimination and everything, the only evidence points to a performance issue, that's one thing. But here you have evidence that she was treated differently, that the regular sequence of events was not followed, and then you also have evidence that she was deficient in her performance. So doesn't that go to the jury on what really motivated or what the real motivation was?
Not in this case, because as the district court pointed out, we have in the very beginning, 30 days into her employment, a notification to the plaintiff that she worked too slow. This is before the incident happened with Jesse DeGrice, almost 2 months before that, and Ms. Fish did say to the plaintiff, you know, you're new, it's okay, but this is an issue. She was marked accordingly on her performance review. After that, there is no evidence that Michelle Fish acted in a way that was discriminatory, even assuming these second reviews did not occur. They are on her performance review. Michelle Fish filled it out, but the government acknowledges that the plaintiff did not initial those reviews. But she still had the first review. She was told it was speed. 60 days later, she's still having problems with her speed. It is documented by employees and supervisors.
It's a permissible inference that the subsequent reviews did not, in fact, occur. I mean, I believe, if I'm recalling correctly, that the plaintiff testified that she was not reviewed subsequent to the initial review. So that would be a fact issue, right?
Sure. For the purposes of this argument, even if we assume those two reviews did not occur, and that all we have is the first review and the final review when she was terminated, we still have the same reasons for those.
Well, and you had the sequencing argument, which is initial review occurred long before the racial incident.
Yes, and that would of course go to the retaliation argument that they're raising, that there was a retaliatory firing here. There also was, not great at math, but I'm going to say about 20, 21 days between the reporting of the incident and the termination. And also, I think it's important to note, it goes a little bit more to the hostile work environment claim, which we're not talking about today, but Ms. Fish did investigate the incident. She didn't blow it off. She didn't disregard it. She did progressive discipline within the Postal Service, and the first step is that you have a discussion. A union steward was present for that. Ms. Fish then went to multiple employees and asked for statements and obtained those statements. Incidentally, none of those statements actually referred to the racial slur and the profanity that's alleged here, but I think the record shows that Ms. Fish did consider this serious, that you cannot attribute Jesse DeGrice's sentiments and feelings onto Ms. Fish. And in order, when you have these coworker comments or coworker behaviors, to impute that on the management official, you need to relate that some way. And we just don't have that here. We have this single incident that was investigated. We have a termination that was 20-some days later that was based on the initial concern raised to the plaintiff, and we have contemporaneous records supporting the reason for this termination.
But doesn't the absence of those meetings tell us something, or possibly tell the jury something? Everybody else gets these reviews. Everybody else is given sort of a process, a period of time, and you've only shown conclusively that she had her first 30-day review. She didn't get the 60-day. There's a question about whether the last one was really an 80-day or just a firing. Why 80 days? Why not the 90 days? All of this is left open. So don't you balance that against these allegations of inadequate speed?
I would say here it looks like an oversight. Was it the right thing to do? Probably not. Michelle Fish should have made sure those reviews were initialed.
Is there evidence in the record that affirmatively shows that with respect to the reviews that the plaintiff was treated differently? I mean, I know there's evidence in the record about what the process was supposed to be, but is there comparator evidence in the record regarding specific employees who were treated differently with respect to reviews?
There's no evidence in the record with reporting with regards to other reviews.
And so we don't know whether Ms. Fish regularly followed the designated review process or not.
Correct. We know in the four or so reviews that are before this court, we know that the plaintiff on paper had all of her reviews. She only initialed the first review. And we know that the three white women had initials on all the reviews.
Disputes that she had.
Correct. So for,
there's a fact question.
Yes.
There.
But for purposes of some.
We don't have comparators.
Correct.
Right. Well, you started to say the three white women what?
They did initial all of the reviews.
Yeah, they had their reviews. So there is some evidence that.
Yeah, I mean, that seems contradictory to what you just, a little bit to what you just told me.
I suppose without any other evidence that Michelle Fish engaged in any discrimination, I think it's very difficult to connect the fact that these reviews weren't signed.
There's some evidence that other employees may have been treated differently, and you have the plaintiff's testimony that she did not, in fact, have those reviews, and there's evidence in the form of the signature that other employees did, but whether that allows an inference of discrimination is really the issue here, not the question of whether she, we don't know whether she was treated differently or not. And so assuming she was, there's still not enough evidence. That has to be your position.
Yes,
I think.
Yes, thank you, correct. There were.
I'm not trying to state your position.
Right,
for you,
I understand.
But I think.
I understand. We have a very small group of probationary reports from other employees that were signed. There was
and
not.
These happened to be the same women she claimed were mean to her.
Yeah. Yes. I think believe two.
Or made fun of her or whatever it was.
Correct. And even with regards to those women, there are only a handful of incidents, and those were really part of the hostile work environment claim, which she chose not to pursue. There was only one age claim or age statement that was made to the plaintiff that she reported to Michelle Fish about the plaintiff's age. Michelle Fish is also a member of the plaintiff's class with regard to age. And so there, again, there's not this connection between this one coworker statement that the plaintiff didn't hear, that she learned secondhand, and some type of inference of age discrimination where you can impute this coworker statement to Michelle Fish.
Was there an explanation for why she was let go at the 80-day mark?
I can't remember the exact testimony. I believe it was simply that she wasn't doing the job and they didn't want to keep her on for the next 13 days because she had been 80 days into it and it had not improved her performance. And the two other supervisors who were consulted also agreed that, you know, this is a fast-paced environment. This hub facility is about the size of a football field. It's essentially a factory job. It's busy, it's loud. They are time sensitive. You have carriers coming in that need to get out, and she just wasn't moving quick enough for the job. And that's really the reason that these particular positions are probationary, to see if you can do it. They're really hard jobs, and she just couldn't keep up with that. And that was conveyed to her in the beginning, and it was the reason for the termination. And the sort of various vague kind of in-between issues or events that the plaintiff brings up just don't put together this atmosphere or evidence that Michelle Fish was discriminating against her when she terminated her in this circumstance. And similarly with the retaliation, I think as I discussed, we just don't have that connection that this was retaliatory. From the beginning, it was just really a performance issue in a job that really required a top performer.
But she's going along being slow, and everything's fine, and then shortly after she complains, it's her time to leave. Even though, you know, she hasn't had 90 days.
Sure, and I think the only inference you could take from that situation is she was let go 12 days early. She was still a probationary period. I don't think, given the context of the whole situation, that is enough to infer retaliatory conduct, particularly when you see that the Postal Service acted as it's required to in terms of its investigation by following its procedures and by talking to employees and taking statements.
Well, but you can follow the procedures because you know you have to, and also decide we don't want a complainer around. It's a tough environment. Either live with it or we're getting rid of you.
I'm sure that's a possibility. I believe that the record and the deposition testimony shows that Jesse DeGrace also complained about the incident and complained about Victoria, the plaintiff here. And the record shows and the deposition testimony show that other employees complained about her. So we don't have these employees being terminated either. And there just isn't this, you know, connection when all along the performance was an issue in a job that requires performance and we just weren't having it here. And again, we have these contemporaneous records that support what Michelle Fish said. If the records didn't say that, if the other supervisors didn't say, yes, she was slow, then I think we would be talking about something different here. But we not only have these supervisors, we have other employees saying that she worked too slow. There isn't anyone that says she worked fast enough. There wasn't a single deponent or affidavit other than the plaintiff's own opinion saying that she performed the job well and she performed it fast enough in order to succeed.
Was there any discovery regarding how many probationers get fired during that period or how fast they were or anything like that? I know there was something about how many you process in it.
There was discovery into whether or not the Postal Service had terminated someone during their probation for working too slow. And in the records that we could locate, there was not. And this is really according to the Michelle Fish, who was a supervisor, that's where that information would have come from. And in that regard, I think the plaintiff points to the Smith case in terms of what's this third factor of pretext. I'm not sure the plaintiff is referring to that particular issue carefully, because other cases citing Smith, and we talk about this in our brief, do say that even if it's a new basis for terminating an employee, that's not per se pretext. Because in that instance, any employer who fired someone for a new reason would be subject to going to trial for pretext. I think here, because we have this flagging of an issue right in the beginning, before the plaintiff raises any allegations that any employee said anything to her about her age, race, or national origin, before anything, we have this issue that you work too slow. And then 80 days later, with contemporaneous records from four other people, we have a confirmation that, yes, she worked too slow. So in this case, we have a plaintiff who couldn't do the job during probation. That's the reason that the Postal Service has probationary periods.
But wouldn't it be, I mean, that would be fine if you followed, if she had her reviews and then she was fired for being too slow.
Can you say that again, please?
Hmm?
Sorry, I misunderstood.
I guess those are great arguments, and I think they would certainly carry the day on a summary judgment motion if it was also shown that, look, she had her 30-day review, she had her 60-day review, and then, you know, it was the 90-day review, and she was too slow, and we fired her. But you don't have that.
Sure, of course. I'd still refer to, you know, the arguments that we make in our brief on this issue, that we don't have any evidence to tie Michelle Fish into discriminatory intent. The honest belief rule, which is also part of her decision when there's a management decision, is did she honestly believe the reason she was terminating her was for speed? The record is clear that that's correct.
But there's no explanation for why she didn't have those interviews. I mean, those assessments, right?
Respectfully, I think it depends who you ask. Michelle Fish believes that she did give them. The plaintiff says she did not receive them. So, of course, for the purposes of this motion, we assume what the plaintiff says is true and that she didn't receive them. So we don't have an explanation. But again, there's nothing to infer that that was because of race as opposed to just an administrative oversight, when the only conduct that the plaintiff really complains of is from a couple coworkers, and that conduct was addressed.
In other words, in your position, in your mind, the evidence is insufficient to attribute a discriminatory motive to Ms. Fish, even if she didn't conduct the review.
Yes, yes. There's simply no logical way to tie it in. The plaintiff doesn't do so through case law or the evidence.
Okay.
So
okay.
The government requests that you affirm the district court. Thank you.
Piper.
Thank you. A few rapid fire points. If a person is terminated for a reason that has not been used before to terminate someone, And if an employer departs from normal procedure in the process of terminating someone when they do something else with a bunch of other employees, those are classic pretexts under the case law that support a claim for discrimination. So I think that's very clear, and both of those exist in this case. It's also important, I think, to note that the court placed great emphasis on the fact that some other people indicated that, well, she was too slow. But Brandy Witten, who was also my client's supervisor, also testified that it was her opinion that my client was terminated because of her race. And Ms. Perkins, who is one of the substantially younger white comparators, also testified, it's in the record, that she felt my client was treated differently because of her race, because she was treated differently from birth.
Is opinion evidence of other employees in the absence of facts to support that, is that even admissible?
I think it is here because they are knowledgeable people who know that what happened at the workplace. Witten is another supervisor.
What are the facts that support those opinions in the record, other than what we've already discussed?
I don't have a lot of time. It's discussed throughout the brief. Ms. Witten testified about a lot of different racial incidents. Other people who were African-American, Ms. Fish fired, were brought back through an appeal process. Nonetheless, Ms. Fish fired him. So there's a pattern of terminating African-American employees. Ms. Perkins worked with my client. She was observed all the daily activities. She understands what her deficiencies were compared to Victoria's. She felt, based on the comparison, that Victoria was treated differently because of her race.
Now, did you get an affidavit from Perkins, or did somebody report what she said?
It's testimony in the deposition record in this case.
She actually testified.
Yes, okay. You have to go back to the records to find that. A couple other points.
Your time is up.
Okay.
I know there's a little bit of time, but
I understand.
You made the best of it.
Thank you.
All right. The court may call the next slide.